This is Imperfectly Polished with Monique Bondi. It's styled, not staged.
It's Wednesday, the 1st of July. Welcome, besties, and welcome to Imperfectly Polished, the space where we celebrate confidence, wellness, self-care, and the beautifully messy journey of being human. Money. It's something we all need, we all think about, and if we're honest, something that keeps many of us awake at night. We often associate financial well-being with numbers in a bank account, but what if money is really about so much more? What if it's about our relationships, our mental health, our sense of security, and even our identity? We live in a world where we are constantly encouraged to keep up, to have the bigger house, the nicer car, the designer labels, the dream holiday, and the perfect life. But behind so many closed doors, families are carrying a very different reality. Financial stress is one of the leading causes of anxiety, relationship breakdowns, and emotional burnout. Yet it's still one of the last taboo subjects we openly discuss. Today, we are changing that. Joining me is someone who has spent over 15 years helping people navigate some of the most difficult financial moments of their lives. As a chartered accountant, certified personal finance counselor, and the author of How to Survive the Middle Class, better known as The Money Guy, Jonathan Penn believes there are no perfect financial solutions, only trade-offs. Jonathan, welcome to Imperfectly Polished.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, before we dive into the numbers, the budgets, and the psychology of money on Imperfectly Polished, we always like to get to know the person behind the profession. Normally, we ask our guests, what's in your bag? But seeing you, the money guy, it's only fitting today that we ask you, John, what's in your wallet? Let's start with the obvious one. Are you someone who still carries cash, or have you gone completely digital?
I don't carry a wallet. I hate carrying a wallet. I only carry my phone with me. And so, yeah, it is easier. But yeah, I hate carrying coins around with me. So that's probably the reason why I don't carry a wallet around with me, just practically.
What's one purchase you've made that's brought you the greatest joy? Not because it was expensive, but because it was meaningful.
Sure. The truth is, I don't know if it was the most joyous purchase I've ever made, but I have recently qualified, as you said, the US qualification to be a certified financial counselor. And that was a bit of a splurge in a weird way. Mm. And so it cost me a lot of money, but it was really meaningful. And it was in dollars. So it cost me, but it's worth it, I would say.
John Penn, is he naturally a spender or a saver? Depends who you ask, you or your wife.
No. I'm a Jewish CA. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, what do you expect? I'm a saver.
Definitely.
Although my wife is a spender, and let's just say that she's made me change a little bit, and it's broadened my horizons.
John, we'll be right back after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Continuing our conversation with Jonathan Penn, the next question. What's the best and worst financial advice you've ever received?
I would say the old generic one-size-fits-all type mm-hmm. of advice. Mm-hmm. The truth is it's generally a behavioral problem, not necessarily a knowledge problem. Nobody, let's look at it like this. Nobody's mm-hmm. ever sat in my office and said, you know, Jonathan, I genuinely didn't know that I shouldn't spend more than I earn. People already know that. Mm. You know, pay yourself first. Budget better. These things aren't wrong. They're just useless on its own. It's the behavior underneath that hasn't been addressed first. The real question should be, why do we keep making decisions we are going to regret? The worst advice is really giving the wrong information. Mm-hmm. It's the right information given to the wrong person at the wrong time. And that's important. It's so important that we are giving the right advice to the right person at the right time.
So what does being rich actually mean to you today, John?
For me, it would probably be options. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's not a number. It's the ability to choose your time with your family, your mm-hmm. future. The people that I see that are most in distress, they aren't always the ones with the least amount of money. They're the ones with the fewest options. Debt, I would say, is the opposite of rich. Not because it's the opposite mm-hmm. of money, but because it's the opposite of choice. Rich, it means that I get to decide. Debt means that the decisions have already, in fact, been made for me. So, yeah, financial wealth gives you options. Financial wellness gives you peace. I suppose the goal is both.
So we are going to continue our conversation with Jonathan. John, you've spent years sitting across the table from families during some of the hardest moments of their lives. What have those conversations revealed about the financial reality facing so many South Africans or our community at large? Let's dive right into that. The cost of keeping up, let's
right.
call it.
So look, I would say the gap between how people look and where they actually are is enormous. If I could just give a bit of context, I'm a CA and, as you said, a certified finance counselor. What I do is I do one-on-ones with people. I do counseling workshops, presentations, sit with couples, with families. I've seen a lot. And over the years, I would say things are split into two. I've seen so many things. I usually sit with a person. They quite literally and figuratively throw their bank statements at me. And they would say, look, this is a situation. And I've found that I was putting out fires, but the fire never actually went out. The embers were always still there. Right. And that kind of pushed me towards, which is my drive at the moment, and that is preventative education, reaching people before they hit that crisis point. There's a doctor, and he's an author now, Peter Attia. He's got this analogy about throwing eggs off a building, and he had this dream that he was catching the eggs all the time. And he realized that what he should do is go on top of the building and stop the guy from throwing the eggs.
Yeah.
That's preventative education. And that's kind of the genesis of my book that I wrote. I've seen everything. Part one of my book is what I've seen. I call them different Stevens.
Yes, we're going to get to that.
Yeah, it's the different profiles of people that I've seen. And part two, which I've just completed, it talks about 10 commitments. And in there, talks about trade-offs. It talks about, you know, where to go, what to actually do. And I think the two streams together are a great area to, you know, which really deals with what, you know, we deal with the day-to-day and what I see.
If you'd like to engage in our conversation with Jonathan, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. We're going to continue, John, because I think this is a really important conversation that needs to be had, and it may not just take one show. You say that financial pressure many families face isn't just challenging, it's catastrophic at the moment. What are you seeing behind closed doors?
The situation
is dire.
There's no doubt about it. And the debt, it isn't just tight, it's unmanageable. And nobody around knows just how unmanageable and how bad it is. People are literally months away from their homes being taken away, their cars being taken away. But they're still smiling at shul. You know, that's what they're doing, right? And the societal cost of honestly feels higher than the cost of pretending. And I think that people, they choose to lie, not necessarily because they're foolish, but because we've made honesty more expensive, the more expensive option. And it's actually something which I'm passionate about. And I think I'm so glad to you and to Chai FM for, you know, giving me this opportunity.
Of course, it's a very important conversation.
To air these concerns, and they are real, and it's not comfortable necessarily, and it's not what everyone wants to hear. But unfortunately, let's talk, you know, it's happening, number one, and let's talk about it.
Let's get it out in the open.
Yep.
So we live in a culture, John, of comparison. I feel like heavy even saying it. How much of our financial stress comes from trying to keep up with everyone else?
Look, a lot of it, obviously. And it's a uniquely close proximity kind of comparison that we do. You know, people go to the same schools, the same shuls, same WhatsApp groups, literally and figuratively. You see everyone's lifestyle daily. And that's not to negate that there are structural costs. We know there are very high costs of living in Glen Hazel, inverted commas.
Yes.
The schooling, kosher food, security, you know, and general things that we have to pay for, that, you know, I call it the double tax system, where we have to pay for our own security, our own healthcare, for our own everything, even the roads. We have to pay, you know, to clean up the streets, the parks, whatever it is. So they are realities. But unfortunately, as you say, this comparison is really part of the problem.
So let's continue on, let's say, school fees, extramurals, therapies, holidays, simchas, birthdays, cars, the list of must-have seems endless. When did these become expectations instead of choices?
Yeah, I mean, somewhere along the way, I don't know where, but these extras became the baseline.
Mm-hmm. Baseline, I like
OT, that. OT, speech therapy, overseas holidays, bar mitzvahs for hundreds of thousands of rands, treats that become normal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody voted on this. I didn't vote on this. Did you vote on this?
No.
I don't know. And the bar just keeps on rising all the time, and no one can keep up. We act like we can keep up, but no one is.
So also, salaries aren't rising while all the costs are getting higher. So how people can't
it's a time
be
bomb.
Managing
you
it.
Know, we've discussed this off air, and it is a time bomb. And I'm not saying, you know, people when they hear me say this, I think that they think, oh no, you know,
you exaggerate.
Exaggerating, you're catastrophizing mm-hmm. the thing. I'm not saying it's all going to fall apart tomorrow. What I'm saying is, for an individual family, it's a catastrophe. It's going to blow up. And we're seeing it. I'm seeing the effects of it, where money is at the forefront of families breaking up, of divorce, of suicide, of alcohol abuse, of narcotics abuse, of financial abuse. These things are realities. Again, they're not comfortable to talk about, but they are happening. And I think it's, again, we're talking about it is a starting point, and having the conversation is a great starting point.
So, if you have a family sitting in front of you, John, and they cannot pay both. They can't pay medical aid and they can't pay school fees together. It's just unbearable for them to be able to afford both. What advice would you give them about which one they should be balancing up or scaling down? But we can continue that after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We're back with Jonathan Penn, and we were ending off before the ad break about asking John what advice would he give to a couple who sat before him and said, we cannot pay medical aid and school fees at the same time. What advice would you give them, John?
Look, I think there's a bit of context, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to understand how they got into that situation mm-hmm. in the first place.
Yes.
So, you know, on one foot, you know, I can kind of give you an answer, but I think that's the important point, is that people were walking in to see me and they were saying, you know, your scenario over there, but, you know, we can put out that fire, but mm-hmm. then it'll be something else tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow it's going to be another expense, and which one do I cut out?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got this principle of there not being solutions, only trade-offs.
Yes.
And every financial decision has a cost. The question can never be, you know, can I have this? It's what am I trading for it? For example, if you look at a house, it comes with a bond.
Mm-hmm.
The lifestyle comes with the debt. The bar mitzvah comes with 5-10 years of repayments. There's always going to be a trade-off that you need to make. And, we've discussed off air, and mm-hmm. I use the coffee conundrum. That's what I like to call it.
Mm.
People love to ask this question, and I like to always, you know, hear engagement. Maybe our listeners can also give their 2 cents.
Yes, please.
Is it coffee in the morning?
Mm.
Yes or no? 50 rand a day. You know, is that important, or should I be investing it? I'll tell you the numbers, because if you are 25 years old and you put that 50 rand away, by the age of 65, it will be 3.39
sure.
million rand. It sounds amazing.
I think you should repeat that.
So 30 years from the age of 25 to 65, sorry, 55, is 30 years, is 3.4 million rand.
For going a takeaway coffee every
right.
day.
But then the other side of the
yes.
coin is, but hold on a second, that 50 rand coffee, it gets me up in the morning, it gets me going, and I need that.
It makes me happy.
Right. And I actually saw a meme that said, I'm not investing in that investment. I'm investing in myself so that
yes.
I live to 65. So I actually
yes.
get there. So, you know, that's a question that I get asked often. But I think that's not really, I mean, it is a question. It's a
yeah.
fair question. But the question I think we should be asking ourselves, not is it good, is it bad, but is it conscious? Is it automatic? Are we thinking about what we're doing? And you can extrapolate that, not only to coffee, to the house. Why? I'm seeing it so often. People are moving into this large, massive house when they were perfectly okay in a small apartment. It's not only about the coffee, and it's not only about the car. People buying a brand new car. Why are you buying a brand new car? Is it because you have to, or is it because, no, you've thought about it?
Mm-hmm.
I have a test. I call it the insurance test.
Mm-hmm.
Before you buy something, ask the question, am I going to be able to afford the insurance on it? How many times does it happen where someone buys a car And then they realize, oh my goodness, I actually can't afford the insurance on it. Mm-hmm. If you're having doubts about the insurance,
don't buy the car.
Don't buy the car. It's about thinking before we act. It's about asking the question, why am I buying this? Why am I doing this? And I think that the point is that every financial yes also has a no. Every choice closes another option at the end of the day.
So we've got a question from one of our listeners. What about the constant parental pressure, John? And it starts from as young as nursery school ages, with all the therapies, with the parties, and then it just explodes when they grow up in terms of camp, in terms of extramurals, and the likes. What do you say to parents who are struggling to manage that?
Well, we can talk to the parents, but I think it's bigger than that. This is where's it coming from?
Mm.
It's coming from the schools and from the schools and from those institutions. Mm. I think they have to take a look at themselves and saying, what are we doing? What are we doing, guys? I can tell you, again, the fallout that I've seen, that mm-hmm. I'm seeing all the time, is real. This it's not only happening in the Jewish community. Mm. What I'm saying is, you know, everyone always says that the Jewish community is so amazing, and it is. And we're so good at rallying around a cause. When somebody's sick,
yes.
you know, we get around it and we do our best. But what about preventative education? You know, and I know it's something we could talk about a little bit later on,
yes.
but we tend to deal with the reactive so much as a society. We deal with after the fact. And the truth is, while I understand that giving to a cause mm. is important, a welfare, I understand there's a halachic obligation,
yes.
why can't we change the mindset around dealing with a problem before it happens? Why does it have to get to that point? And, you know, I think I've got some reasons why mm. that is happening.
Yeah.
But I just think that as a community, we need to take this seriously, because what I'm seeing is a lot of pain out there. There's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, and you know, we're yeah. talking about it. We're ventilating the issue, but people are under pressure. They've been forced, whether by the schools, by their mm. schools, by their peers, whatever it is. And let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
It's untenable.
Exactly. John, a question from a listener. Is life insurance worthwhile, especially over 55, or should you cancel it?
Look, I'm not a financial advisor, so I want to just put that out there. What I would say is financial products like life cover, if I would just go a step further, and what I'm seeing is people are cancelling things like life cover.
Yes.
They're cancelling them in a busy situation where they are making these dangerous decisions, bad decisions. But again, they're not doing it because they don't know.
But I think their hands are tied.
Right. It's not that they're doing it because for fun they're cancelling
yes.
it. It's because they have no other option.
Yeah.
And, you know, to come back to the question, I would not cancel your life cover, you know, too soon. But everything comes down to affordability. I always use the example, everyone wants to be on Classic Comprehensive, right? You want to be on the top
yeah.
plan. And people come to me and I help people with their medical aid. I'm not a financial advisor, but I help people.
Mm-hmm.
I explain things to them. That's what I do. And I say to them, can you afford being on this plan? Before anything.
Yes.
That's the question. It's about affordability. If you can't afford to be on the plan, I'm sorry, can't be on it.
Yes.
That's just how we should be asking the question before we do
yes.
anything. Can I afford to pay for the OT? Can I afford to pay for speech and hearing? Those are the questions we need to be asking ourselves. And don't be afraid to actually say to the teacher, don't be afraid to say to the school, to the shul, I can't afford it.
Yes.
There's no shame in that.
There isn't shame. And I think that's what people are finding difficult.
For sure.
John, how you also speak about financial infidelity, people hiding debts or financial struggles from their partners. Is that happening more than people realize?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen so many couples where
sure.
it's much more common than we care to admit. You know, what is it? Maybe for the listeners that don't know what it is,
mm.
it's a financial deceit mm. within a marriage. Where one or both parties are hiding and lying to each other. For example, as you said, the hidden cards, there's hidden debt, covering up large expenses, and it affects both parties. And there's also what I see very often is that this breaks the trust between the you know, the husband and the wife. And even the in-laws come into the picture, where the in-law is paying for this, and you know, and that impacts marriages. I've seen marriages fall apart because of this. And it's a serious situation. And again, that's what I do. I meet with couples And it's heartbreaking, but it's so important to have this conversation around money. And I sit there as a CA. Mm. Again, I'm not saying it's it gives me that credibility. Mm. Oh, he's a CA, so the husband feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. The wife feels comfortable that, you know, the husband, I see it very often, he pulls the wool over his wife's eyes.
Because maybe he actually doesn't have a choice.
Right, and that's why I sit there, and you can't, I know we're on radio, but yes. I just want to say, you can't BS me, right?
Yeah.
I've seen too much in my life, mm-hmm. and I've seen a lot that you can show me the spreadsheets, and I'll, again, you can't, if you want to hide something from me, you'll hide it, but mm-hmm. I'll pick it up if it's quite blatant. And so many times it's happened. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I met with a couple, and the wife was being pressured by her husband to not pay tax. She had some, occupation. I think it was an OT or something like that. And he said, no, don't worry. And I was sitting there and I said, hold on a second.
Yeah.
This is dangerous what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're earning income. It's an
offence.
It's an offence. It's dangerous. I'm obviously not going to force you to. Mm. And she felt, I could see there were tears coming in her eyes because someone was taking her seriously. She knew deep down that she should be paying the tax on this mm-hmm. on this income. But her husband, and that again, you said financial fidelity, but there's financial abuse, which is unfortunately so common, and that is husbands where their spouse's salary goes into an account where the spouse doesn't have access to.
Yes.
They are given a certain little pocket money in order to spend at Moishi's, whatever it is.
I mean, we can talk about kosher food as well.
Yes, so you have the double whammy. You have expensive food, but there's things on the ground that are happening, but there's things behind the closed doors that are just aggravating the situation and making it so much worse.
Do you think people are choosing to stop keeping kosher or not, John? Has it come up in any of your conversations?
Look, it hasn't really come up like that, but it creates a lot of animosity.
Mm.
It creates no one likes to be taken advantage of, whatever it is, and definitely around the schooling system, that's an area where
that's a conversation.
It's a conversation in on itself.
Yes,
but that is a time bomb that is going to explode. There's no doubt about it. What's happening? And again, this is a show in and of itself. But what people are doing mm-hmm. is they are taking out so much debt, their debt and their parents' debt, to pay their school fees today. And they are not making provision for tomorrow, for their medical aid and for their pension in 10 or 15 years' time. This is a time bomb. I'm not making this up. This is what I see every day. And unfortunately, the institutions, it's not a nice thing to say, but the schools, in this case, they only care about, are they getting their fees at the end of the month?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it needs a broad interaction, and there needs to be the whole community involved because, yes, it's only school A, but school A is part of shul A, and it's part of the community. This is going to affect everyone. There's only one pie, and we're cutting up this pie into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. The donor pool is getting smaller
Absolutely,
all the time.
Getting smaller.
So the situation isn't getting better. It's only getting worse, unfortunately, and let's deal with it.
On that point, if anyone would like to join our conversation, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. I think Johnny's just touched on very important points and would like to hear from you, the listeners, if you agree or disagree with what Jonathan is saying, please WhatsApp us. John, if someone's listening today, feeling like they're quietly drowning, what's the first thing you want them to hear?
Yeah, there are people out there that are drowning. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it, and that people are struggling, and I see the the simchas that people are putting out there, and the debt that people are in, and I think they really need to say out loud just to one person, whoever that is, that I'm not okay, that we're struggling. Just let's admit it. That's a starting point.
But then why aren't they having the simchas that they can afford, even if it's a simple tea? I know what it goes back to, but...
Yeah, I mean, we all know it, but it's we want to impress everyone. We want to keep up with the Joneses proverbially. We what are our values? Our values drive our behavior. Mm-hmm. I always use the example of... what are you going to do? What is your priority at night? To go to sleep where your credit card is being paid, or is it you know, I'll use the example. Someone came up to me last year and they said to me, are you going away? And I said, no, I'm not going away for whatever reason. Mm. And I said, are you going away? He goes, I can't afford it, but I've just got to be in Plett. I have to be in Plett. And they said to me, I shouldn't say this to you as the money guy, but I have to be there. I've got no choice. Pressure from my wife, pressure from my spouse. And I just, it got me thinking. Again, no judgment here because he was one of many people that have that. But I just thought, what are your values? Are your values to be in Plett, proverbially, or for me, it's my I want to be able to sleep at night and know that my credit card is under control. That, unfortunately, our values are in whack. That is unfortunately the situation.
So it also goes down to, do you think husbands are afraid to say no to their wives, and that's a contributing factor?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, as a husband, I don't want to say no to my wife and to my children. You want to be that rock, that person that provides. And it definitely it plays part in the psyche. And, you know, cowboys don't cry.
Yes.
I mean, as a husband, you don't want to ever be seen to cry, literally and proverbially. But I think we need to just step into reality. And I think we are where we are. And, you know, I've as I said in my book, I deal with this, but we have to start dealing with the with our problems. We can't bury our head in the sand. I have the saying that SARS always gets their man. You can put your head in the sand, and it happens so often with people. Mm-hmm. You're getting the email from SARS, and you're getting the creditors are hounding you. They're not going away. These guys aren't going away. The longer you delay it, the worse it's getting. And call me, call somebody, call a professional, and someone will help you. You're not alone. That's what I want people to understand.
Thank you for that. Jonathan, another thing is what was I going to say? I've gone like a little bit off track. Gambling and emotional spending are often coping mechanisms. Why are these conversations still difficult to have?
I mean, there's so much shame. I would say there's shame stacked on shame. There's two layers. There's layer one, which is the financial situation itself. It's already deeply shameful, already hidden. And then there's layer two on top of that, which is the gambling, the spending, the drinking. Whatever someone reaches out to get their temporary relief is layer from layer one. Mm-hmm. Now they're ashamed of how they're coping on top of being ashamed of what they're coping with. It's that double whammy. And here's what I think even makes it harder, that most people haven't even connected the two themselves. They don't consciously think, I'm gambling because I'm of financial stress, or I'm drinking because of financial stress.
Yes.
The link is unconscious. You can't talk about something you haven't admitted to yourself. It's not a character flaw. It's a survival mechanism that outgrew itself. It worked once, at least temporarily. It just never got the memo that it was no longer helping.
This is what I wanted to say before. So if salaries aren't increasing, but the bills are getting higher, how genuinely do people cope?
Well, they're not coping.
I mean, I know that, but I'm saying...
Yeah, practically.
Yes, practically, John.
Look, it's a very long answer, and it's quite involved, and I think, you know, I've touched on it, and there's... That there isn't, there's different layers and there's different areas of this puzzle, and it's not only dealing with, you know, people always say to me, why can't you just help Mr. X, Y, and Z, help them budget better? You know, that's a big one.
Budget better.
You know what a budget is? Yeah. It's a scoreboard. It tells you what the score is. It doesn't tell you why you lost the game. It doesn't tell you about the tactics. It doesn't tell you about the team formation. It doesn't tell you about how well you prepared. A budget is a manifestation of a deeper malaise.
And also, you can pay $15.99 for something this week, and next week it is $18.99, and there's a gap now of not having budgeted enough for that new product being made more expensive.
And the thing is that this don't get me wrong, the technical stuff does matter. Mm-hmm. I would say, and I would advocate, having a budget. But everyone's got a budget. It might be in their head. It might be written on a piece of paper. It may be on an Excel spreadsheet. It's definitely on your banking app.
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Yeah.
So when people say to me, no, he just needs to budget better, and that's not the reality. Again, look through your expenses, cancel the subscriptions. We all know this. This isn't rocket science.
So give practical things,
yeah,
John.
So the practical things, again, draw up a budget. I'm not saying don't have it. But and then look at it. Look at it together with your spouse. It's very important.
Yeah.
Not just to, you know, keep it into yourself. Go through the subscriptions. Try and refinance your bond. Look for any expenses that potentially, you know, insurance, that's a big one. And there's potentially on the other side of the thing too, for your income side, just like you can cut expenses, you can try and increase your income. And but at the end of the day, I don't know one person that isn't trying with a side hustle, with trying to generate more income.
Are you seeing that people are even taking second jobs, John?
I'll tell you a funny story. I met a client last year, I think it was, and he's a CEO of quite a large company. And I think we're going to take an air break now. But
we'll continue afterwards.
Right.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Jonathan, a question for you. Thank you for sharing and shining a light on this. Are you single? He did mention he was married.
No, I'm married.
And Carol Zimmerman says, Jonathan, you are speaking the Emmet. So people out there are listening and needed to hear this.
Thank
very
you.
Much so. John, you were telling us a story and then we're going into...
Yeah, so we were talking
deeper.
About generating more income, cutting expenses. So I met with a guy who was earning a really, really large salary, and he's a CEO of a company. And he said to me, he's thinking about becoming an Uber driver at night. And at first I thought he was joking, but he was being dead serious. He wants to keep up, and the pressure from... And his wife was there and she was like, no, no, come on.
Yeah.
And he wasn't being facetious. So it just shows you the level. I mean, I did say to him, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Just by the way.
Yeah, of course.
But I think that the pressure is real. And there's, you know, there's a certain amount of work that we can do. Mm. There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yes.
And I don't recommend you, you know, if you work a full day as a CEO, then become an Uber driver at night. Probably not the best plan.
I don't think people would actually believe that story, because people would look at a CEO and think they earn more than enough and it's covering all their expenses.
The easy answer to give you is no.
Yes.
As you earn more, you spend more.
Yes.
And the expectations just grow and grow and grow. I've seen it. I was a CFO of a company a few years ago, and the same people came for a loan every single month. No matter what you increase their salary to, they just kept on coming. It's the same people over and over again. People, if they earn more, they spend more. That's just the reality, unfortunately.
So let's get into some deep questions. Why do so many of us keep searching for the perfect financial plan instead of accepting that every decision comes with compromise?
I would say this perfect plan, it requires no sacrifice. And that just, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
We want the answer that gives us everything without costing us anything.
Yes.
And that, as I said, doesn't exist. You know, beneath so many of these decisions is there's a psychological element. And in my book, and I talk about it a lot in my presentations, there's unconscious money scripts that we have from our childhood.
Yes.
And there's an American, he's a financial psychologist. His name's Brad Klontz. And he identified four money scripts. And what they are, very basically, on money avoidance, money worship, money status, and money vigilance.
Mm.
And these run quietly behind every financial decision that we make. And, for example, the avoider never starts. The worshipper is never satisfied. The status person chases this plan that looks good, that the one that actually works. The vigilant person keeps refining their plan instead of actually executing it. Knowing your script, it doesn't excuse your behavior, but it allows you to start the process of knowing why you're making these bad decisions. So, yeah, it's what I can do as a financial counselor is I can show you the path, but ultimately you have to walk it. You have to make those tough decisions, uncomfortable decisions. And that's why, coming back to your question, this plan, people don't like the plan.
No.
They don't like the numbers. They don't like what they're looking at.
Now, John, in your book, you've written about your five Stevens framework. Who are they, and why does understanding where it matters?
So, as I said a bit earlier on, is that I've been meeting with people, literally hundreds of people across the community, over 10 years. And there were a lot of patterns. There were a lot of things that came up. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to put it down. I wanted a starting point. If you think about a GPS,
yes.
It starts with one question ultimately, and that is, where are you now?
Yep.
And you can only go somewhere if you know where you started, mm-hmm. starting, right? So I came up with these five Stevens. And the five Stevens are, just go through them very quickly, is there's grieving Stephen, then there's bleeding Stephen, and then in the middle there's break even Stephen, then there's believing Stephen and achieving Stephen. And I've kind of given a face to people and where they are in their lives.
Yes.
Because financial advice, giving someone some guidance, if it's tone deaf, if it's not realistic, if it's not something that will make an impact in my life, then it's useless. If I say to somebody, to grieving Stephen, who is in so much debt he doesn't know what to do with himself, save 10% of your salary, it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
It's he's not going to listen to you.
Yeah.
So you need
he can't actually.
He can't.
Even.
And that's what generic one size fits all financial advice these books do. They tell you, as I said, cut the debit orders, do this. We've heard this all before. Mm-hmm. We need to look at a person where they are at. And that's a starting point. And that Stephen, each Stephen needs to make one step forward. I say one step at a time, one Stephen at a time.
Social media constantly tells us we're behind. How do we stop comparing our financial reality to someone else's highlight reel? We'll be back after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm back. We are still talking to Jonathan Penn, the money guy. So as I said, John, social media tells us we're behind. How do we stop comparing our financial reality to someone else's highlight reel?
So, yeah, look, no one posts their bank statements on social media. You're not seeing their real life.
Yeah.
You're seeing their version they choose to show you. And you're comparing that polished version to everything you know is true about your own life. That's not a fair comparison.
Mm.
That's not even a real comparison. It's performance. It's a performance. It's not reality. I always like to say that you're comparing your backstage to their stage.
Yes.
It's rigged. Don't do it.
You believe prevention, as you said, is more powerful than rescue. Why aren't we investing more in financial education before people reach this crisis point?
So this is an important question for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it like this. Because prevention isn't sexy. And it isn't measurable. Rescue gets the building. Prevention gets nothing to point at. A shul building, a school building, a shidduch made, a marriage made. These are visible. They're countable. They're photographable. Is that a right word? You're photographable.
Yeah.
Forever. You've got a picture, with a guy standing there next to a building. If I work with, say, 10 couples, and it's happened before, and say out of this 10, 6 of them turn around their marriage because of me.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to know about that? It's never announced.
Mm-hmm.
The suicide that is prevented.
Mm.
No one leaves a trace of that.
Yes.
And I think it's also about ROI, return on investment. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants a return on their investment. Even if you're a donor that's giving anonymously, you want to see what's happening. So
yes.
If you're a donor and you are giving anonymously, for example, to Yararon, great mm-hmm. organization,
yes.
love it. And you can drive past and see that food parcel being
yes.
handed out. You can see it. It's tangible. And the recipient is receiving it. There's that instant, we need this instant return on investment.
Yes.
But it comes at a cost, though. There's a cost that we're funding a crisis instead of, I would say, that could have been prevented. We're never going to see what didn't happen. But ultimately, kids from broken homes, well, what's happening? Homes are being broken up. As mm-hmm. I said, there are these social ills that are manifesting. Prevention now would be a fraction of the cost compared to the rescue later. It just doesn't come with a naming opportunity, unfortunately.
The important question, which I think John is going to answer and be truthful and honest about. If you could change one mindset around money in our community, what would it be?
Sure. So again, this could be a show in and of itself. But just quite quickly, I would say, as I said earlier on, we think budgeting is the answer and cutting costs is the answer. It isn't, it isn't only that. The technical stuff matters, as I said earlier on. But the reality is that most people I know have tried that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're pretty much in the same place. Because that stuff is only part of the puzzle. It's a big piece is behavioral. the attitudes toward your attitudes, my attitudes towards mm-hmm. money, your patterns, your values, what drives those values. My philosophy is like this. It's behavior before budget. Until you understand your behavior producing those numbers, you can build the most beautiful budgets and spreadsheets, but they'll be wrong within a week. There's no comparison. I think, you know, that's just the reality of the situation. And again, I mean, if I could throw it in there, there's so many things with regards to my 10 commitments.
Yes, I was just about to come to that.
You know, I've got a list of things that I call commitments. Why I call them commitments is, you know, it's not a list. The list is something very aloof, something that isn't inculcated in our lives. And these commitments, the number two is stop comparing. I think that's what is a starting point for us. Stop comparing and keep your eyes on your own trolley.
Keep your eyes on the own trolley. That's really good. What does financial wellness look like beyond having money in the bank as we start to wrap up our conversation?
Sure. Again, I think sleeping through the night.
I was about to say that.
You know, sleeping through the night, that for me is financial wellness. It's beyond a bank balance. It's when you can say no without feeling like a failure and yes without feeling like a fraud. A marriage that talks, I would say, about money instead of avoiding it. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that we should be looking at. We always say wealth is measured in rands, but I would say wellness is measured in peace. That's what I would say.
What's one trade-off every family should think carefully about before making a major financial decision?
Look, lifestyle now, I would say, versus options later. Mm-hmm. Every rand that you spend now trying to look good, spending on the car, the holiday, bombers that you can't really afford, they're not just expenses. They're trading away a future choice for a present appearance. Most people never frame it as a trade-off, but that's actually what it is. They're on autopilot. They aren't actually thinking what they're doing and what the repercussions are for their actions.
So just before we wrap up, if someone is listening today and they're overwhelmed, ashamed, or in debt, or simply exhausted from trying to keep up, what's the first step they should take, John?
Look, I think they need to say it to one person, not to try and fix it today. I'm not even saying book an appointment with me, which will be great, but reach out to somebody. And as I said earlier on, just acknowledge that you're struggling. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't manage. I think that's the starting point. And almost every recovery that I've ever seen has started that way.
John, thank you for such an honest and refreshing conversation. I think there might be a part two. Today reminded us that financial wellness isn't about having all the answers. It's about having the courage to ask better questions, to make conscious trade-offs, and to let go of the pressure to keep up with everything else. If there's one thing I hope our listeners take away today, it's this: your bank balance doesn't define your worth, and asking for help is never a sign of failure. Every financial journey begins with one honest conversation, and perhaps today's conversation can be the beginning of yours. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Imperfectly Polished. Until next time, take care of yourselves, give yourselves grace, and remember that life isn't about being perfect, it's about being beautifully, imperfectly polished.